My name's Jeff and I'm an addict.
Hello, Jeff.
I think it's the second time I've spoken on a mic in my life. The first time was at a convention in Bournemouth, and after 5 minutes the fire alarm went off. It was always me. That was my first fault. But when Daniel asked me to sign up, my first thought would have been no. With recording, my first words would have been, I wish to remain silent throughout this interview. That's kind of like how it was for me. I can sit here and tell stories for 40 minutes. I can tell some great stories. I can make everyone laugh. I can sit here and tell jokes. Knock knock and all that. I can do all that. And a few people, I'm just trying to get, because a few people have come up to me and said, are you nervous? And I don't think I was, but I've sucked all that up. And now I'm nervous. Because people, are you nervous? I come from, I'm living in Somerset at the minute. And I'm comfortable there. And I know everyone in the meetings. And I've got an own group there. And Carl, when you get asked to share at Trafalgar Square, it's a big thing. And that's just how it is. And when I was asked, I think about 4 months ago, 5 months ago, it seemed like a good idea. I drove down this morning with my mate. My son's just finished a long prison sentence. He came home last Friday. And I'm taking him back with me tomorrow for a week. So that I was coming down anyway, tomorrow. So when I was asked, what date would you like to do? I looked on the calendar and I thought, Friday, I'll come down Friday and take my boy back and my granddaughter tomorrow for a week. So that's why I'm here, And when at the beginning, when we said, take a few minutes to remember why we're here, I took them moments and I thought, why am I here? I'm here to share. It's as simple as that, really. I'm trying to get a message out there. So if you are new around, welcome. If you can't stop using drugs, you're in the right place. I'm sweating there. I started using it probably 13. First was probably alcohol. And I stopped using it at 43. In between that time, there was prison sentences, hospitals. Everything it tells us. I trust the basic text. I trust the process of NA. I didn't know about NA. I'd probably been to a meeting in prison in Pentonville, just to see someone from another part of the prison. Just to look up and didn't listen and thought it was all rubbish. I just couldn't wait to get out and use. What happens for me is when I go to prison, I didn't have no concept of the disease of addiction. I didn't know about that. As far as I was addicted to drugs, which I'm no longer addicted to today. It's my head I have to deal with today. I'm not a drug addict anymore. The obsession to use drugs left me. I'm 10 years clean now, so it probably left me about 9 years ago. Probably the process was my head was driving me mad when I got clean. I didn't understand the disease, and I got to a place of self-hatred. That's where this illness took me to. I ate in every pore in my body. I couldn't look in the mirror. Someone's just come up to me with a phone or a couple of photos and said to me, they're your old pals. I don't look healthy, and they're both dead. And they don't look healthy. And these are the guys I used to sit on the street with and use with all day. We used to sit there all day and use whatever we could get. Probably for about the last 8 or 9 years of my using, that was. I had a partner who was also an addict. I've got 40 minutes to share, and I've never shared 40 minutes, okay, ever. I think the first share I ever done, I probably shared for 50 minutes. Because I shared about every drug I ever took. You know, but we're not interested in that, are we? It tells us, you know, we're not interested in who or how much or who you knew or anything like that. But my first ever share was at a meeting. I still remember it. I cringe. I was at a meeting in Western Supermare called Parents in Recovery. And I took up near enough the old meeting, you know, because it was all about me. I've got a great story to tell, you know, so you better listen. Because none of you ever used like me, you know, and I cringe when I think of that. I think I took about 50 minutes and I probably spoke about every grain of powder that I put in me. You know, and, you know, that's changed now, and it's a process. Yeah, so, you know, I was living on the streets. I had a partner around the corner who I used with, but she stopped using, and she got to the place where it was... she couldn't take no more. You know, I ended up kind of in a corner with an oxygen tank. I ended up in an oxygen tank for 6 years. With a beard down there, like that photo with the other two guys, I was the third one, and 21 stone. And I couldn't breathe, and I couldn't walk. You know, there was nothing I could do. I could take drugs, you know. That's all I could do, I could take drugs, you know. I couldn't smoke because my lungs had packed up. I couldn't really get in it because my veins had mostly gone, but I could still swallow. So it was kind of like methadone, alcohol, tablets, anything I could get in me, I took. And I thought, this is it, you know, this is it. This is how it's going to be now. I'm going to die. This was at 42, probably about 41, 42. I'm going to die now. I can't breathe. I couldn't look in the mirror. I couldn't walk. And my partner kicked me out. And I thought, how dare you kick me out? You know, Don't you know what you're missing out on? And that's the honest truth. That's the delusion of this illness. You know, I used to roll around in Old Street on the benches and on the pavements. And one day she said to me, Jeff, please stop rolling about outside Iceland. All my friends walk past you. Right? And my answer was, they're jealous because their husbands ain't like me. And I actually believed that. That was the, you know, that was the delusion. And I actually believed that I was this great guy, 21 stone, on an oxygen tank, with a beard down there. I was God's gift. You know, and the reality was, I was deluded. I was ready to die. You know, hospitals, I love hospitals. You know, I used to phone hospitals up. I used to phone ambulances up and say, I can't breathe, can you come and get me? You know, and because you've got nurses in there and you've got drugs in there. You know, and you've got nurses who wash you, they feed you, they take care of you, and they give you drugs. You know, I'd always go in there on a methadone script, Valium, Temazepam, you know, Librium, anything I could get, I'd take. And I mean, there's times when they've tried to discharge me out of an hospital and I've refused to go. You know, honestly, he talks about, you know, ways and means to get more. And that was one of my ways and means to get more drugs inside me. Free of charge. I didn't have to go out to put myself on offer. I couldn't walk. You know, it was... And eventually they did discharge me. And I was so ill that I had this oxygen tank that was that big. But as big as that bin it was, and it had to be plugged into electricity. And so they had to give me a flat. Because my partner kicked me out, I had to have electricity. Now, electricity only in the park. So they had to give me a flat that day. So I said I could plug the oxygen tank in. And like a good addict, I couldn't get to the park anymore, so I brought the park into the house. You know, I brought all the guys from the park into the ass, you know, and that's how my using was. And I got to a place where I thought, you know, it just can't get any better. This is it, I'm going to die. I was prepared to die, I was willing to die, you know. I didn't want to live, I didn't want to be alive. So I was in this little flat in Islington, and I didn't want to wake up in the morning. know, I just didn't want to wake up. But I didn't have the balls to kill myself, because then my family could blame me. You know, my son would be without a father, and he'd say, that selfish bucker. You know, and I thought I was unselfish. You know, by just putting everything in front of everyone to get my drugs. My thought was, what's their problem? What's their problem? I'm doing this to myself, you know. And then I moved to a park up Chapel Street, all right, which wasn't far from the flat I turned into the park. So if no one come round, I used to have to get to the off licence and the chemist, and it used to be lamppost by lamppost, because I couldn't breathe and I couldn't walk. I used to make an effort to get to that lamppost, stop for 10 minutes, get my breath, get to the next lamppost, but I'd go 20 lengths to get there. You know, I'd get there, and Boots, I had to go to Boots as well in Chapel Street. And I was up in this park, and since I've been clean, my little sister said to me, Jeff, I used to drive past that park every day just to make sure you were still alive. You know, she said, if I was with my friend, I'd never say, that's my brother in there. She never acknowledged me. You know, I always got invited to Christmases at my parents. You know, I always had the love of my family, but I didn't acknowledge it. I couldn't return it. You know, it was just me. Everything was about me, you know. Couldn't go anywhere without drugs in my pocket. You know, there was no holidays. It was just nothing. You know, one time I booked an holiday with my partner, bought traveller's checks, bought half answer this, half answer that to go. Got greedy, got arrested the night before, got bail, the judge said I couldn't go. That was probably, and that was the last time I ever booked an holiday. I didn't go. I got the money back, told lies about my partner falling down the stairs. You know, that the half answer this and the half answer that. And just, you know, cracked on, cashed the trade, changed the traveller's checks, and used. And that's what my life was. In and out of hospitals, intensive cares, being ventilated. Still using, you know. I mean, the hospital, the nurses and the doctors was trying to save my life, and I'd have people coming up, bringing me drugs up, and I was, you know, trying, it says in that book, they're trying to commit suicide on a daily basis. So all the work the hospital was doing, I was going down the toilet and putting it all back, you know, just putting it back, drinking and everything. Then I was in intensive care for the last time. You know, since I've been clean, I've been in hospital. I've stayed overnight. No, I had last Christmas I was in for a week. I had gallstones, and I was on oral for a week. So you know, that was all right. that was fine. You know, we call it a free laps. You know, the doctor said it's okay, but I got scared. You know, I got scared. I had my sponsor coming up. I had a stream of visitors all day. And he brought me the book up, my sponsor. And I had a guy next to me who looked like he was going to lose his leg. I knew him. And he was still using it. It looked like he was going to lose his leg. So I'm getting it more for every hour on the hour. So I've got the illness that side of me. And I've got the recovery constant. He didn't have no visits, by the way. I had a constant, and all I was thinking was, why don't you fuck off and leave me? Just leave me with him, you know what I mean? That was my first thought. And it was like, I got scared, you know, a week on the Ormolf, and I thought, am I going to come out addicted to opiates and use? You know, because I haven't used since I've been clean. You know, I haven't used since I've been clean. Since the day I went into treatment, I haven't used. And I shared that with my friend, and he said to me, it's where your head's at. It's where your head's at with a pain relief. You know, I phoned up, my first sponsor was phoning, he's in here actually, phoning me every day, saying, Jeff, I hope you ain't being a martyr. I hope you're having pain relief given to you. You know, and And I was. And then my friend came up and I said, I'm scared. You know, I've been on this for nearly a week. Because I had to wait for the operation because we've only got a little hospital. And the operation I had to have, a team of French people who do operations, doctors, all right? All right? A team of French doctors rented a room out on a Tuesday. And that was it. So I don't know what night I went in, but I went in and I had to wait till the following Tuesday. So I was on oral morph every day, every hour on the hour. I never forgot that, you know, every hour. And my friend said, it's where your head's at. Why are you taking the pain, the oral morph, you know? And as soon as I had the operation on a Tuesday, the pain went. You know, the pain disappeared. So I stopped the oral morph. They came round and I said, I don't want it no more. So, I mean, I took it for the right reasons. You know, it was nice, don't get me wrong, but I took it for the right reasons. So, that's since I've been clean. I've been in one police station overnight since I've been clean. You know, I was always in police stations. This was old business. This was for old business, warrants, old fines. You know, I came in a mess. With a lot of damage behind me. Caused a lot of damage to a lot of people. You know, when I came out of treatment, the treatment centre I went to, we wasn't allowed to go to meetings. We wasn't allowed to go to NA. We didn't do no step work. It was called the Self-Empowerment Treatment Centre. And there was two groups a day. Tuesday afternoon we had off, it was free time. But we had H&I coming in. Okay, H&I was coming in. And I was sitting in groups with this oxygen tank. I had an oxygen tank in all the groups. And it was like, I started to go to NA, and a couple of guys who knew me from around the area came in and done shares, you know, and I didn't believe that they was clean. You know, you must have something. Because my intentions was to come back to Islington and just have a puff. You know, just have a bit of draw in my pocket, because I can manage that. You know, that was what I believed, I can manage that. These guys started to come in, and you know what, I started to lose weight. Okay, I lost 5 stone in treatment. I lost 5 stone, I went down to 16 stone in treatment from 21. Because I stopped putting shit in my body. I stopped putting the methadone, I stopped putting the alcohol. You know, that's all it was. I started to try and have a little walk around the block. And I started to listen to these guys, and you know what, I thought, you know, they came in, they give me affirmation, you're doing really well, you know, I never had affirmation. You know, I never had affirmation. I mean, I've got good parents. I've got an older brother and I've got a younger sister, and they ain't addicts, okay, they ain't addicts. I've got a son, he ain't an addict, you know, and So I've got good parents. They're still together. My parents are in their mid-80s now. They're still together. They still sleep in the same bed. Okay, so, I don't come from a broken family or nothing. They're still together now. My belief was, it ain't going to be me. This ain't going to work for me. It may work for some people. I'm too fucked. You know, it ain't going to work for me. So these guys come in and give me a bit of affirmation, and you know, one day I thought, just give yourself a chance. Just give yourself a chance, you know. If it don't work for you, it don't work for you. If it does work for you, it does work for you. You know, and what I did, 15 weeks, I was in treatment for 20 weeks. At 15 weeks, we was allowed to go out to meetings, but we had to have someone with us. And I started to go to the meetings in Weston-super-Mare to see who's about and see what the graph was and how am I going to have money when I come out of treatment, you know. And people I know, I said, nah, we don't do that. You know, we're in meetings, we do step work, we've got sponsors, and we stay clean. You know, we try to lead a good life today. And I thought, nah, it can't be. they're like me. I know them from back where I live. But and then I started going to meetings whenever I could get there. And then when I came out, I went to meetings every day, sometimes twice a day, you know. And when I heard you never have to use a gun, I felt relief. You know, I felt, you know, these people are telling the truth. Because I started to listen to shares. I started to hear people who had their, you know, was having good relationships with their families, was having good relationships with partners. They was having good jobs. You know, I started to actually believe it. That, you know, just maybe I'm in with a chance here. And but my head started. Put down the drugs, my head wakes up, doesn't it? You know, my head's been asleep. When I think or feel something, I used to use drugs. As soon as I put the drugs down, my head wakes up. It hasn't been used for 30 years. You know, it wakes up. It's brand new. You know, it's only fucking like 12 years old. You know, it's just been on one track, on an obsession, a compulsive and obsession, to find ways and means to get more drugs in me. And my head, man, the obsessions in early recovery, it's fucking, you know, they drove me mad. They actually drove me mad. You know, I remember when I came out of treatment, I had an old car down here. I came back and picked the car up. I was driving up the M4 or M5, whatever. I pulled over in the services and, you know, this lovely young lady smiled at me. You know, so my head went, right, that's it. You know, she followed me. I was on the M4. You know, she had nowhere else to go. We were on a big long road, and then she turned off, and I thought, fuck it, you know. But that's where my head went at the beginning, all over the place, but by this time I had a sponsor, you know, I had a sponsor who reassured me. My first sponsor's in there, who taught me about the illness, you know, the disease of addiction, which I suffer from. I never forget, I just go up to him and say, my head. And he said to me, Jeff, I'll make you a promise. And I thought, right, here we go. He said, always be on your shoulders. You know? And wherever you go, it'll go with you. You know, and that's the reality, isn't it? Our head's always going to be on our shoulders. You know, and wherever we go, we're going to take our head with us. But then he said, if you do this step work, and get closer to your higher power, you'll know what to do. That's what he said to me. And I'll never forget, you know, I listened. I started to listen, man. And that's kind of like been the process. You know, I did the step work. And, you know, got a little bit of peace of mind. You know, but my head can still go there. You know, my head can still go in an obsession there as it did when I was 10 days clean. My head can still go. But I know what it is. It's my illness. You know, and I have to separate what's real and what's not real. Because, you know, I can sit here and I can kind of like have 99% positive stuff in my life, okay? And then I have 1% of something. But could be what someone said, could be the way someone's looked at me. And guess what my disease will grab hold of? The 1%. You know, it'll just... Just, you know, disregard the 99% positive stuff in my life, and I'll be left with the 1%. And before I'll know it, it'll be 10%. And then it'll start to balance up. And then it'll be 50-50. And if I still run with it, before I know it, it's the other way around. My life's 99% negative, full of shit. And there's only one thing in my life that's positive. That's where my head goes, you know. But I'm aware of it today, and I've got the 12 steps. You know, I've gone through the steps. So, you know, if you're new around, give yourself a break, get a sponsor, and give it a go. You know, go through the step work. So we kind of like got to, my sponsor, we go through the steps, we'll go through the steps together. He also told me I can only keep this by giving it away, and I've stuck to that. You know, I've stuck to that. Got up to, started to get a little bit of peace of mind and a little bit of, you know, getting to know who I am. You know, I'm not a bad guy. I'm quite all right. When I'm clean, I'm all right. Now, when I'm used, I'm not all right. When I'm used, I'm a fuck pig. When I don't use, I'm all right. I'm a good guy when I don't use. You know. Yeah, so go through the step well with my sponsor. Got to the four. I was a little bit fearful around it, around doing the four, because at the time where I live, step four was getting bad press. Okay, I was getting a lot of bad press. Everyone was blaming step four for relapses. They were chasing money. All right, that's why they was relapsing. Or they was getting in relationships. That was a cause of relapse. Or they was on a step four. And I was bulking at step four, and that was a relapse. Okay, so I thought, fucking hell, I better stay skin. Because I don't want a relapse. I better not get into a relationship. And I better not do a step four. You know, because it was bad press. And I've got a good support network around me. You know, I've got people I love, I've got a good support network. And I did a step four. You know, I did a step four and I came away thinking, you know, I'm in recovery. And out of the four came the next steps to the nine. You know, I looked at all my bad behaviours, all my defects, the six and seven, and you know, I looked at everything. You know, I still cringe. You know, I still cringe sometimes, some of the things I did when I used, I still cringe. But again, that's my illness. You know, I can't change it. That's my illness trying to worm its way in. And I think it was about step seven, my sponsor moved away from Western, moved back to London. And kind of like we tried, and it was kind of like I write a step out and I drive to London. But by the time I got to London, I was going to see my family, and the step work became at the back of my head. It was in the boot of my car, ready to go. Managed to get a couple of them done, you know, and the distance was becoming difficult. So, I had to look for a new sponsor. And I thought, you know what, I just don't want to go back to step one. I really, really don't want to go back to step one. You know, because that's what some sponsors do. You get a new sponsor, they say, right, do step one. You know, I ain't used. You know, I ain't committed any crime. You know, I ain't become unmanageable again. Why do I want to go back to step one? I had a bit of power in my life. You know, so why do I want to go back to that? So I asked someone who I kind of like respect, who's got a lot of clean time, and I asked him to take me through the last four steps, and he agreed. You know, he agreed. So I think I had two sponsors I've had, and I will always have a sponsor. Okay, I will always have a sponsor. So my first sponsor, I think I was with him for about 5 years. Okay, so that's half of my recovery. And he taught me about the illness, the disease of addiction, how it will come on me, and how it will play games with my head, and where it's centred, which is in my head. You know, and I'm truly grateful for that, because I didn't know none of that. You know, I didn't know nothing about the step work, I didn't know nothing about the disease of addiction. All I knew was how to find ways and means to get more drugs and get them in me. And then the next thing I want to do is find ways and means to get more drugs and get them in me. You know, and so this guy I asked to sponsor me, he's big on humility and self-acceptance. Okay, he's a guy, he does, you know, he's taught me about humility. Okay, just being me, just sitting here. This is what it is. This is Jeff. That's all you got, man. I've got nothing else here for you. You know, it's me. This is it. And so he taught me about, you know, the self-acceptance. I mean, it's okay. You know, I'm okay. I still get me off days where I'm not okay. You know, I'm still, but again, my first sponsor taught me about the disease, and I know when it's on me. You know, and he taught me about doing things unconditionally as well. You know, because what he said to me, if you do things with expectations, and you don't get what you expect, you're going to cop a resentment. And once you've got a resentment, the disease is rife. All my behaviours will start coming out once I've got a resentment. The anger will come out, the poison will come out. I want to get you back. I want to, you know. So I have to do things unconditionally. And thank God, in the 10 years I've been clean, I've had one resentment that's played games with me. You know, it played games with me, and I had to bring it back to me and look at my part in it. Why did I cop that resentment? Because I did something with an expectation. It was as simple as that. I did something for someone, and I expect. And when I asked for some help, I expected them to help me. And guess what? They weren't available. It was to move out, and this guy had a big van. So I copped the resentment. You know, but it was my fault. It was my fault by doing things with conditions on them. So that's what my sponsor I have now has taught me about. You know, the self-acceptance side of things, the humility, and doing things unconditionally. You know, he talks to me. You know, we kind of like talk to each other. He's 67, 25, coming up to 25 years clean. And the stuff he's done unconditionally will blow the whole room away, man. You know, but I ain't going to tell you. You know, and it's all unconditional. You know, sometimes it causes a bit of pain, but you know, he's got the process of letting go. This is what it is. I did it unconditionally, and I have to move on. You know, and from 21 stone man who couldn't breathe and couldn't walk and had a big oxygen tank. I no longer use the oxygen. My beliefs, I will end on this. I'll never fly anywhere. I'll never be able to get on a plane, okay? Because I'm too unwell. I'll never get into a relationship and I'll never get a job. I'm just going to sit in there and my days are going to pass. I've flown loads of places. I've been to world conventions. You know, I'll get on a plane when I want to get on a plane. I've got a young partner. Okay, I think it's quite an healthy relationship. If you ask her, she may have different views. She may call me a selfish bastard sometimes. You know, and I think one of my defects is I still play about with his sarcasm. Okay, believe it or not. Okay, I can be a little bit sarcastic and not realising how it does offend people and upsets people. You know, and but then I read it in. My sponsor tells me you need to see yourself coming. Before you act out, before you do anything, you need to see yourself coming. Which means before I act on anything, I need to check it out with myself. You know, I did me amends. You know, I need to, there's still lots of amends. I need to be ready for that. So I pray every morning, get a connection to my higher power. And, you know, be ready. I bumped into someone in Bristol a couple of years ago, you know, a female, I owed her the amends. And I had to do it. You know, I was scared. But I couldn't go and pray in the toilet. I couldn't phone my sponsor because she was there in front of me and I owed her amends. I was probably about 9 months clean. And, you know, and I pulled her to one side and she said, you was in early recovery. You know, she tried to give me an excuse. She said, you was in early recovery. I said, no, I was clean. I wasn't in recovery. And that was the difference. When I'm clean and I've not got the steps, I'll behave out like I could do when I use. When I've got the steps in my program and I keep checking myself, my behaviour changes. You know, and I'm a good guy. And I've got things in my life today that I don't want to lose. You know, I don't want to lose it. So I've recovered stuff that promises and a lot more. And I'll leave it there. Thanks for listening. Thank you.